My name is Christian Ashley, a seminary student and servant of God, and you are listening to the Let Nothing Move You podcast, a proud Anazal Ministries podcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to the next episode of the Let Nothing Move You podcast. I'm your host, Christian Ashley, as we continue on through the book of Deuteronomy. Today, we're going to be in Deuteronomy 29 through 31. But before we start, I will say next episode, Joshua, Noel, and I of the Whole Church podcast will be discussing Deuteronomy 32 together and having some fun debates along the way, as well as talking about the new show that we're currently recording and will release when it's actually finished. Turning the page on Divine Violence, where we're going over the book Show Them No Mercy, Four Views on God and Canaanite Genocide. So I'm looking forward to that. So that'll be next week. As well, I do want to say, I have at the moment potential job opportunities, and I'm trying not to hype myself up too much. I've gotten some positive responses from people I've sent resumes out to, so I'm hoping something comes out of at least one of those. If that were true, that would mean I would really have to leave home and go to places, some of which I've never been to before. So I would just ask you guys, continue to pray with me and ask that, you know, God just send me where he wants me to go, that I have the discernment to say yes to the right place, and I'm not led astray by salary or state or my own personal feelings. I'm just led to where I'm supposed to be. So I thank you for all that. And we're just going to go into it today, starting in chapter 29. We'll be going through verses 1 through 9. These are the words of the covenant that the Lord commanded Moses to make with the people of Israel in the land of Moab, besides the covenant that he had made with them at Horeb. And Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, "You have seen all that the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his servants, and to all his land, the great trials, that your eyes saw the signs, and those great wonders. But to this day, the Lord has not given you a heart to understand or eyes to see or ears to hear. I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your clothes have not worn out on you, and your sandals have not worn off your feet. You have not eaten bread, and you have not drunk wine or strong drink, that you may know that I am the Lord your God. And when you came to this place, Sihon, the king of Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us to battle, but we defeated them. We took their land and gave it for an inheritance to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of the Manassites. Therefore, keep the words of this covenant and do them, that you may prosper in all that you do." After we've gone through the blessings and cursings of the last chapters, Moses is like, look, you heard everything that was just told to you right there. So what I want from you is submission to these ideas, to God, listening to him alone. You have seen all of these things. Some of you are still alive and can remember what happened in Egypt. Most of those people are dead, though, because they rejected God. So think about that. Think about what got you here. Oh, and oh, by the way, not only did God bring you out of Egypt when you were slaves and you were nothing and you had no way to save yourselves, but even in the midst of your apostasy, these 40 years in the desert, your clothes haven't worn out and your sandals weren't worn out either. You've not lived the way that other people have. You have been supernaturally protected by God himself across this journey, even when you were being you and not listening to him. So in light of all that, as we're making a renewal of this covenant here, that's one of the big parts of this chapter, just think, please, about what's going on here, about what's happened here, about how things had to come to pass in order to make this be a thing. Because when you don't, you're going to end up in the exact same position as you were earlier, except you'll be in the land. So don't bring harm to yourself and don't bring harm to others. Just submit. And that's going to be the rough part of the Israelite history, is that there will be times when they do their job. There will be times when they submit freely and they listen to God and they do his will in the world. And then there are a lot of times to, unfortunately, far more notable times when they don't. And as a result of all that, God has to punish them based on the promises that he made earlier. So when that happens, don't get upset. When that happens, don't be afraid or dismayed, except to go, oh, wait, no, this is our fault. We should do something about it and make things right between us and God. So as Moses heads in the next part of here in verses 10 through 15, just keep that in mind, starting in verse 10. You were standing today, all of you, before the Lord your God, the heads of your tribes, your elders and your officers, all the men of Israel, your little ones, your wives, and a sojourner who is in your camp, from the one who chops your wood to the one who draws your water, so that you may enter into the sworn covenant of the Lord your God, which the Lord your God is making with you today, that he may establish you today as his people, and that he may be your God, as he promised you, and as he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. It is not with you alone that I am making the sworn covenant, but with whoever is standing here with us today before the Lord our God, and with whoever is not here with us today. So here Moses and God are speaking in front of the entire congregation of Israel, once again delivering the message of just submit to me. This covenant we're making here, this is so important. And if you don't appreciate the importance of it, we're going to have a bad time. And it's not just for the Israelite people either. Look at the beauty that's brought here. The sojourner in the camp is participating here. Everyone who stands there today at that moment in time is to be a part of this covenant. And that carries something with it, that they're God's people, even the people who aren't Jewish. So I need all of you to get your acts together. Listen to what is being said here. And not only is it for you, but it is for whoever is not with us today, which means not only future generations of the Israelite people, but to an extent, Christians are part of a covenant gifted by God to say, look, be mine, submit to my law, listen to me alone. Don't add idols to your list. Don't add your whims. Don't add to your pride. Just submit to me. And that's why he's saying these things to them. Like, look, just submit and things will be better for you. Remember all the promises God said. And remember all the curses he also promised too, if you don't listen to him. So go away from that. Be better than who you are, Israel. Be better than who you are, Christian, as we walk in our lives with him. So we're not the same person we were yesterday. And we are establishing this covenant with him, this covenantal relationship that says, okay, I submit to you. Tell me what to do. Send me where you want me to, Lord. And things are just so much better, Dad. Does that mean that bad things aren't going to happen to us? No. Bad things happen to good people. All you have to do is look out in the world and see that. The most godly people in the world have suffered. But that's not why we do what we do, just to avoid suffering, just to avoid pain. We do it because we love God and he loves us and we want to be there with him. Even though we weren't standing there today with them or in the past with them, we're standing with them now. And we then embolden others to do it so that the future generations will do the same. So not only was this covenant for them, but also for the future. And that is part of why we do what we do. We do things to make good in this world, knowing that other people are going to benefit that we will never know in this life. And that is a good thing. And we'll continue on from there to verses 16 through 29. You know how we lived in the land of Egypt and how we came through the midst of the nations through which you passed. And you have seen their detestable things, their idols of wood and stone, of silver and gold, which were among them. Beware lest there be among you a man or woman or clan or tribe whose heart is turning away today from the Lord our God to go and serve the gods of those nations. Beware lest there be among you a root bearing poisonous and bitter fruit, one who, when he hears the words of the sworn covenant, blesses himself in his heart, saying, I shall be safe, though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart. This will lead to the sweeping away of moist and dry alike. The Lord will not be willing to forgive him, but rather to anger the Lord, and his jealousy will smoke against that man. And a curse is written in this book will settle upon him, and the Lord will blot out his name from under heaven. And the Lord will single him out from all the tribes of Israel for calamity in accordance with all the curses of the covenant written in this book of the law. And the next generation, your children who rise up after you and the foreigner who comes from a far land will say, when they see the afflictions of that land and the sicknesses with which the Lord has made it sick, The whole land burned out with brimstone and salt, nothing sown and nothing growing, where no plant can sprout, and an overthrow like that of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah, and Zeboim, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and wrath, all the nations will say, why has the Lord done thus to this land? What caused the heat of this great anger? Then people will say, it is because they abandoned the covenant of the Lord, the God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt, and went and served other gods and worshipped them, gods whom they had not known, and whom he had not allotted to them. Therefore the anger of the Lord was kindled against this land, bringing upon it all the curses written in this book. And the Lord uprooted them from their land in anger and fury and great wrath, and cast them into another land, as they are this day. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the works of the law. As he has done many times before, and as he will continue to do so, God reminds Israel that they do not serve and bow down to idols. Why? Because those idols will not give them what God will give them. Those idols do not love them. Those things that they seek after, that they lust after, will never love them back the way that God will always love them back, even when they themselves do not love him. And he's going to make a mockery of them when this happens. Not because God is petty, not because God doesn't love his people, but because there needs to be a punishment that fits the crime of not loving God. There is a punishment to not loving God. You can say you don't like that as much as you want to all day long, but it doesn't change the fact that it is true. God punishes wrongdoing on his time and in accordance to his will. And wrongdoing in this case specifically is worshiping after other gods / idols / things that take us away from him. Whatever that thing is, we need to eradicate it from our lives, excise it from our lives, whatever it takes to remove it, because we cannot live in full faith in God if we are clinging on to that thing that does not bring life. And for the Israelites, it would be seeking after other gods. Why would they do that? They have the one God that loves them, that has given them the law. Well, it's because of human nature. The heart wants what the heart wants, and a heart isn't always good at knowing what it needs. And their hearts oftentimes would say, oh, man, this is too much work. Or I'd have to follow these rules if I'm with God. Well, if I follow Baal, if I follow Ashtoreth, I mean, I can do this instead. I mean, it's more free to do that, isn't it? God, it's just so restrictive. God and all his rules and laws, he just hates having fun. He just hates people living their own lives and establishing their own ways in the world. It's like, it's foolishness to say that. But every single one of us has been guilty of that in some way, shape, or form in our lives. And that is something we are to avoid. That is something we are to destroy in our own hearts. Why? Because those things that we think that we want, those things that we think are freeing, are not freeing, are not loving, are not good. They are, in fact, evil. They are, in fact, taking us away from where we need to be and the people we are supposed to be ministering to. And you see it all the time, from the newest convert in the church all the way up to the pastor, where Christians cause problems for themselves because they know what they are supposed to do. And then they go and do the direct opposite because that brings them more pleasure, or because they're done with this, or because they want something else in their life. And never once has it benefited them to do so. Pastor or the secretary who embezzles, the deacon who sleeps with another deacon's wife or another elder's wife, and vice versa. It's done out of a sense of pride, out of a sense of evil, of sin, of wanting, desiring something that is not ours to desire. And God is trying to destroy this in his people. And like, look, you've heard the stories. You remember, we're going to go on again in 32 about how God has talked about Sodom and Gomorrah. He brings it up here too. Remember what I did to them. From young and old, it was the culture of this people to live this way and cause harm to others and not love men and to not fear me. Ergo, when they lived the way that they did, and I brought justice to them, you who say that's a good thing will have no right to say it's a bad thing when I do it to you. Admon and Zeboiim, there's not as explicit in scripture about what's going on there compared to Sodom and Gomorrah. But if you go back to Genesis 14, they are part of the other cities that were attacked by, goodness gracious, the Mesopotamian king that Abraham had to come and rescue them, and devastation was brought to the land. So it's another frame of reference there. And as well, they too were part of those five cities. The only one it made out was Zoar. So out of the four to the five cities around Sodom and Gomorrah, only Zoar made it out. The other two faced destruction, if I'm remembering my biblical geography correctly. So you can look at them right now. You're close to the Dead Sea. You can look, oh, all those areas right there, there used to be people. Now there ain't. So if you don't want to end up like them, if you don't want the anger of the Lord kindled against this land and bringing up all the curses written in this book, and you don't want to be uprooted from this land and sent elsewhere and have people mocking you because all you had to do was listen to me, then just listen to me. It's a very simple premise. And God also reveals a part of himself at the end there where he's like, look, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. This is Moses and God speaking about God saying, look, I've revealed enough of myself to you. There are mysteries you will never comprehend about me. And that's okay, because you don't need to understand them. I don't need to understand every aspect of how God works. I would love to, but I am a finite human being who cannot understand the infinite quite yet. And maybe up in heaven I will, but for right now, that's not what matters. What matters is that there is a God. He is real. He loves me. He wants me to not be who I am. He wants me to be his man through and through. So submit to that God. Submit to this law, Israel. Yeah, it's an imperfect law. But God knew that. And God knew they would fail. But he told them to do it anyways, because if you look forward, they're going to see, oh, it was all leading up to Jesus. It was all leading up to his sacrifice, fulfilling the law itself, being the ultimate sacrifice, the ultimate person that took every sin upon himself, every transgression they ever did, every transgression I've ever done, put upon him. And God saying, that's what it was leading up to. Those secret things, I can explain Jesus' sacrifice to you right now in every explicit detail, but you don't need to know that, Israel. This is a secret thing I am keeping to myself until the time is for it to be revealed. So accept that and stop yourselves from ending up in a situation that is going to happen. So that when it does happen, and God knows it will happen, Israel will have no way to say, you didn't warn us about this. You didn't tell us that this would happen. No, they have no one speaking in their defense, because their actions are indefensible, and they know that. Next up, we'll be going into chapter 30, verses 1 through 10. And when all these things come upon you, the blessing and the curse, which I have set before you, and you call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord your God has driven you, and return to the Lord your God, you and your children, and obey his voice and all that I command you today, with all your heart and with all your soul, then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have mercy on you, and it will gather you again from all the peoples where the Lord your God has scattered you. If your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there the Lord your God will gather you, and from there he will take you. And the Lord your God will bring you into the land that your fathers possessed, so you may possess it. And he will make you more prosperous and numerous than your fathers. And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring, so that you will love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live. And the Lord your God will put all these curses on your foes and enemies who persecuted you. And you shall again obey the voice of the Lord and keep all his commandments that I command you today. The Lord your God will make you abundantly prosperous in all the work of your hand, and the fruit of your womb, and the fruit of your cattle, and the fruit of your ground. For the Lord will again take delight in prospering you as he took delight in your fathers, when you obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes that are written in this book of the law, when you turn to the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. God, the world just loves talking about the wrathful, vengeful, evil God of the Old Testament. And they loved the lovey-dovey, forgiving, hippie Jesus and God of the New Testament. And they say, oh, God just kind of chilled out when he got a son. God realized that he was in the wrong to ever act the way that he did in the past. And Jesus is the real way to go. You know, it's just peace and love, baby. It's like, okay, there are aspects of what you just said there. Very small aspects, but there are aspects there that are correct. But you were completely and utterly incorrect with your assumption that this God is somehow different in the New Testament when the God of the Old Testament is the same guy. He is immutable. He is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Because that's who he is. God does not learn lessons. God does not have a moment where he goes, oh, no, I was in the wrong to do this. God is perfection. God is constant. And God is both a God of vengeance, but also a God of forgiveness. And it's set up here, thousands of years before Jesus comes up on the scene, saying the exact same things that God would say beforehand in the Old Testament. Because God is unchanging. Because God has always been the same loving God he's been at the beginning, just as he is the God of wrath and vengeance. And this loving God looks down at Israel, knowing exactly what they're going to do, and says, look, when all these terrible things happen, both the blessing and the curse, don't forget that part, the good and the bad. And when I take you out to other nations because of what you've done, I'm not going to abandon you. I'm going to return you, Israel, to where you used to be because I love you. No matter how far away they are, they will return. And not only that, I'm going to make you more prosperous and numerous than the fathers that came before you, which you have not earned, which you have not deserved, but I give to you freely because I love you. I'm going to circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring. Yes, you men, you go through your physical circumcision. That's an outward sign of what is supposed to be an inward change. But not only is that outward sign going to be there, I'm going to do the inward too. I'm going to change you, Israel, into someone who worships me, who brings glory to my name in this earth, and then benefits people who despise my name. Because remember those people that I used to persecute you? I'm not on their side. I used them in their sin to teach you a lesson. And when that lesson has been taught, guess who isn't going to succeed anymore? Those very same people who persecuted you, they are going to suffer. Because they saw what I used them for, and they still do not fear me. They still do not love me. They still do not listen to my laws. But you, Israel, I'm going to make you abundantly prosperous in all that you do and all that you have. Because I am your God, and because I love you. Oh, but God of the Old Testament, he's just anger and wrath and fire and brimstone. He hates people, hates his own people. All he ever does is punish them. You ever hear someone say that out loud? You know what that means? They haven't read the book, or they haven't read the book well, or they've had a very terrible exegeter or someone with an agenda come along and say, this is what's actually happening. That's how you end up with foolishness of, I've talked about it before, of that one guy, I can never remember his name, proclaiming live on stage in front of hundreds of people, thousands of people online, that when Jesus goes to the Syrophoenician woman, he repents of his racism against her, when that's clearly not what is in the text. Or you have people make the claim of God mellows out when he has a kid, and they say it as a joke, but they actually mean it. Well, the truth is, it's the same God, Old and New Testament, and the same God is there today. And that same God who speaks these things to Israel wants to give us blessings too. So we need to live in light of that, not for the sake of a reward, not for the sake of, oh, this benefits me, but for the sake of loving others and bringing those benefits to them. A prosperous Christian in any way, shape, or form should not only be prosperous to himself, but to others. Loving them well, taking care of their needs. Why? Because God has taken care of our needs. And if he hasn't, then we pray to him. If he hasn't, then we say, Lord, why? Help me understand. And then work with him. Listen to whatever answer he gives. As we go through whatever trial and tribulation he offers us, we endure for the sake not only of ourselves, which, yes, you should look after yourself. Don't get the wrong message here. But you don't do it primarily out of love of self. You do it out of love for him who made you. So that when you prosper, you can then go and prosper others. Israel prospered and they helped prosper others with what they were supposed to be doing. If they were doing what they were supposed to do, and the sojourner in the land was taken care of, the widow was taken care of, the fatherless was taken care of. Nations around them could benefit from making loans with Israel, who would not charge them interest, who would actually look after them. So we are to look after others. And then look at what Israel did. What did they do? They repented. And God brought them back into his fold as a result. This isn't a forgiveness that is based on nothing. This is a forgiveness based on people who knew who they were, knew what they had done, and rejected their past and said, Lord, forgive us. Make us better than who we were. I want to circumcise my heart. I want to be your man, your woman through and through. And God always accepts that when it's true. There are false conversions all the time. Sure. But this is not that. This is someone saying, I was in the wrong. I screwed up. Lord, forgive me. And his answer to that is always, yes, my son. Yes, my daughter. Come here. Now we'll go from there to verses 11 through 20. For this commandment that I command you today, it is not too hard for you, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that you should say, who will ascend to heaven for us and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it? Neither is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will go over to sea for us and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it? But the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart so that you can do it. See, I set before you today life and good, death and evil. If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you today by loving the Lord your God, by walking in his ways and by keeping his commandments and his statutes and his rules, then you shall live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. But if your heart turns away and you will not hear, but are drawn away to worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not live long in the land that you are going over to Jordan, enter and possess. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life, that you and your offspring may live, loving the Lord your God, obeying his voice and holding fast to him. For he is your life and length of days, that you may dwell in the land that the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. You ever meet that person who says, oh, it's too hard to understand the Bible. Like it's all written in mysterious language and symbolism and imagery. And like, and none of it is practical. None of it makes sense. Like God doesn't make sense. I'm just pointing him here. I mean, if you want a really blatant statement, I mean, you know, other, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, love your neighbors, yourself. No, I am the way, the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, if those aren't hidden for him, bring them here. I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you today by loving the Lord your God, by walking in his ways and by keeping his commandments and his statutes and his rules, then you shall live and multiply. And the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. It is written there, black and white, in stone for Israel. Do these things. Choose. Are you going to choose life and good? Or death and evil? It's as simple as that. Yes, sometimes there are things written in scripture that are written in mysterious language, or prophecies that are harder to understand, or a poetry that's delivered in a way that goes, wait, what? You're missing the cultural context for it? Sure. Those exist. But there are other times when God removes the mystery, the secret things that he talked about before, and he makes it plain as day. Are you going to choose life and good, or are you going to choose death and evil? And God is a God of life and good. He allows death and evil for a time, but he is not a God of death. He is not a God of evil. God is a God of life and good. Following him brings life to people. It brings good to people when we are following him correctly. Because people have in the past used his name to bring death and evil. And that is not God's fault. That is the fault of those who knew what they were supposed to be doing and rejected him, or thought their own interpretation was better than his. God is a God of life and good. So choose, Israel. Choose, Christian. Life and good, death or evil. If you want these good things, if you want to live, serve me, the Lord, because I'm the only one who can give them to you. Even when bad things happen, even when death and evil abound in the world, I'm the only one who can overcome them. Work with me. Bring good and life to the world through me, because you're not good enough to do it on your own. You will end up, even on your best of days, on your own, leading your life and those around you into death and evil. And I don't want that for you, Israel. I don't want that for you, Christian. As you are walking with me, choose life and good. Now we'll bring us into our next chapter, chapter 31, verses 1 through 6. So Moses continued to speak these words to all Israel, and he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I am no longer able to go out and come in. The Lord has said to me, you should not go over to this Jordan. The Lord your God himself will go over before you. He will destroy these nations before you, so that he shall dispossess them, and Joshua will go over at your head, as the Lord has spoken. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land, which he destroyed when he destroyed them. And the Lord will give them over to you, and you shall do to them according to the whole commandment that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. 120 years old. There are going to be some people out there who say, it's impossible. You couldn't live to be that old back then. And that's not impossible. It's hard, unless you're working directly for God, who had a purpose behind you living this long. Who had a purpose behind you leading Israel this long and being fit enough to do what he's about to do in later chapters. Regular 120 year old men don't do that. Moses ain't no regular 120 year old man, because he doesn't fear death, because he doesn't fear what's going to happen next. He knows he's being punished rightly for not listening to God by striking the rock as he did. And as a result of that, not being able to go into the promised land himself. So what does he do? He could end up bitter. He can end up angry, hating God. But instead, what do we see? Moses submits to God and then goes to Israel and says, look, you are going to benefit in ways that I never will. And I am glad. Not only am I glad, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. He's going to destroy those nations in front of you. And not only that, you're going to be led by Joshua, who has stayed by my side this whole time. And I have trained as my successor. And you guys are going to do great things together. So just go out and do them. Trust in him. Do not fear. Be strong and courageous. That theme is going to come up again in Joshua. It's going to come up. It's come up before in the Pentateuch. Why? Because naturally we are not strong and courageous. We are fearful and weak and meek in the wrong way. And timidity and fear. Not the meekness that we are called to in Christ. To humble ourselves, to look after others. This is the bad meek, the bad fear, because they know who's with them. God is with them, and how dare they be weak and timid when God is with them? Because he will not leave you or forsake you. Even when he punishes them way later on, he's not going to forsake you. You're still his people. He's never leaving you either, even in the exile, way later on. He never left you the entire time. He has simply allowed you to be punished for your sins. So don't be like that. Listen to everything that came before. Be strong and courageous and take over this land. It is a daunting task, but it is one well worth doing. So go and do it. Here we see the raising of a new leader, Joshua, who has trained for 40 years under Moses, who has listened to God directly multiple times over. And now it's going to be his turn. Moses was an imperfect leader, as every man who ever would have been in his position would have been. But Joshua can learn from him and see how Moses did things correctly and see how Moses did things incorrectly, so that when he himself becomes a leader, he's not going to make the same mistakes. Me, as I'm on this journey to become a pastor of some way, shape, or form, youth, associate, head, who knows? I've learned from the pastors who came in front of me, from the pastors I've had in the past. And I've learned some good ones, and I've had some bad ones, and I learned from them too. I've learned how I'm never going to run my church if I'm a head pastor one day, because I've seen what that can do to people. I can see what it does to their hearts and how it can break them and think that they're not worthy of salvation. Oh, sorry. Let me rephrase that. They're not worthy of the salvation that they have, and they cannot actually continue. What's the word I'm looking for here? I screwed myself over. It's fine. Yeah, we're all unworthy of salvation. Let me put it that way. But I will never teach someone that they can lose it. I will never teach someone that they're not good enough today and their salvation's at risk. Or if you don't follow these specific commands, you might not make it in the club. I'm not going to look at someone and say, this is my vision of what a man is, and if you don't align with this, get out of my church. If it's a false impression of what a man is supposed to be, because guess what? Men, like women, can be complex. I'm also not going to neglect women, as I've seen other pastors do in the past, because they're so afraid of not wanting to end up in sexual sin that they don't even talk to other women as much. Not to say they never did at all, but not even going to talk to them in the same way that they would a man, and being with them and listening to what's going on in their lives and taking care of them. I'm going to learn from other pastors, from other leaders who rose up to the occasion and said, yeah, it's 3 a.m. in the morning. I'm tired. You know, my kid just fell asleep. My wife is tired, but you need me. So here I am. Send me. And they go and help. Or the one who humbly is just sweeping trash away at the end of a service and taking care of things in the church that no one asked them to do. No one told them to do it. But they saw a need and they addressed it. And that's why we look at this and go, okay, this is why it's important that Joshua be mentioned here, because he's learned from Moses how to do things correctly and how to do things incorrectly. And that is what leadership is owning up to your mistakes and your intentional choices, because sometimes those two are two very different things. And then discipling people well, looking after them, say, hey, here's how I screwed up, or here's how I've seen other people screw up, so I don't want the same for you. Be better than me, be better than them, and bring God's glory into the world. And Joshua's going to do that for the most part. He's also an imperfect man. He's going to make his own mistakes. He's not going to raise up a leader like Moses did for him, which whether or not God told him to do that, we don't know. But he's still going to learn from Moses. And that's going to impact Israel for years. Next, we'll go through 7 to 13. Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall put them in possession of it. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Then Moses wrote this law and gave it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and to all the elders of Israel. And Moses commanded them, at the end of every 7 years, at the set time in the year of release, at the Feast of Booths, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place that he will choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, men, women, and little ones, and the sojourner within your towns, that they may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, and be careful to do all the words of this law, and that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land that you are going over to Jordan to possess. So we see the continuance there at the beginning, as Moses lifts up Joshua as his replacement, as the next leader in line, and tells him, look, be strong and courageous. You're leading the people into the land. God is already with you. He's not going to leave you, forsake you, so don't be feared, be afraid, or be dismayed. And Joshua needs to hear this, because it's a very daunting task being in charge of a large group of people. I get it to an extent. I've never led an entire nation, but leading people can be scary at times because you're in charge of them in a way. And that's something I take very seriously. I look at verses in Hebrews where it's talked about, you know, pastors will have to give an account of what they did to the people under their care, to the people in their flocks. Why? Because they were supposed to lead them in the truth and righteousness, and to be more like Jesus Christ. And if I don't do that, that's on me. That's scary. What fool wants that responsibility? What a one who's foolish in the ways of the world, but not a fool according to God. The one who's actually righteous. The one who's listening and humbly submitting themselves to God and watching over their flocks well. That looks foolish to the world. But to one who actually loves them, actually cares for them, that's wisdom. That's love. And we who are leaders need to look at that. And if you're not a leader, like, not everyone's called to be a leader. That's fine. Know that this is what your leaders are under. If they're a good leader, they're going to be thinking about verses like those in Hebrews, where they're going to have to get an account of everything that they've done as a leader. And go, oh, this is probably why they make that decision. Or maybe they're not thinking through things, and you need to be the voice that speaks up and say, hey, what's going on here? Why'd you make that decision? Let me understand. Because we are to hold each other accountable too, because ultimately we are accountable to God. And if we grow into fear, or we grow into being dismayed as leaders, as people, we're failing not only ourselves, but we're failing those under our charge. It is a daunting task. Like I said, Rick, I don't know where I'm going to end up being, but I know it's going to be in a position of authority where I am in charge of people, not in how they live out their lives or telling them exactly what to do or, you know, give all your money to me kind of way, but in the sense of they are dependent on me for spiritual counseling, for looking after them, for praying for them, which is something I'm very terrible at doing. I need to be better at. They need someone who's going to watch over them well. And yeah, sometimes that means correcting. That means, hey, this is how you should be living your life. It's not every second of it. Sometimes it's just talking with them and loving them, meeting them where they're at and saying, hey, this worked for me. Maybe it works for you. If it doesn't, here's this other way we can work out on what's going on here. If I'm not who you need, maybe I can send you someone who can. Learning how to delegate, learning how to love people well. And that's part of Joshua's responsibility, is learning how to do these things correctly, just as Moses had a learning curve. Moses wanted to take everything on himself, and I am very guilty of that at times. But that's not healthy. So we had to learn, no, I need other people to do their job and delegate it to them so that I can focus on other things. The disciples had the same problem. After Jesus resurrected and went ascended to heaven, it's like, look, we've got an issue in the church in Acts. These people need to be fed. Orphans, widows, they need to be taken care of. But if we focus on this, we're not going to be able to preach. So we need someone to do the job. So they found people qualified to do it. That's part of leadership. That's part of learning. I love these people. I want to take care of them. But it's also learning I can't take care of everything myself. I need people around me who are capable of doing things that I can't do so that God himself is glorified through those actions. And then I am freer to do the things I'm supposed to be doing. Then Moses makes it a point to continue writing this down and in proclaiming in front of all of Israel, look, those 7-year festivals you're supposed to be having, Feast of Booths as well, read this in front of all of Israel. Why? Because they need to remember the law. Because sometimes you forget it because it's been a while, which makes sense. Memory is a bad thing for most, for a lot of people. I'm very guilty of that. So we need to be reminded of these things. And it's not just some people, it's not just men, it is everyone, so that they may hear and then fear God as long as you live in the land, because this is a good thing, because this is what they need. And we'll finish off today by going through verses 14 through 30. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, the days approach when you must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in a tent of meeting that I may commission him. And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in a tent of meeting. And the Lord appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood over the entrance of the tent. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, you are about to lie down with your fathers. Then his people will rise and whore after the foreign gods among them in a land they are entering, and they will forsake me and break my covenant that I have made with them. Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them and hide my face from them, and they will be devoured. And many evils and troubles will come upon them, so that they will say in that day, have not these evils come upon us, because our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil that they have done, because they have turned to other gods. Now, therefore, write this song and teach it to the people of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me against the people of Israel. For when I brought them into the land of flowing with milk and honey, which I swore to give to their fathers, that they have eaten and are full and grown fat, they will turn to other gods and serve them and despise me and break my covenant. And when many evils and troubles have come upon them, this song shall confront them as a witness, for it will live unforgotten in the mouths of their offspring. For I know what they are inclined to do even today, before I have brought them into the land that I swore to give. So Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it to the people of Israel. And the Lord commissioned Joshua the son of Nun and said, be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the people of Israel into the land that I swore to give them. I will be with you. When Moses had finished writing the words of this law in a book to the very end, Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, take this book of the law and put it by the side of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there for a witness against you. For I know how rebellious and stubborn you are. Behold, even today, while I am yet alive with you, you have been rebellious against the Lord. How much more after my death? Assemble to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to witness against them. For I know that after my death, you will surely act corruptly and turn aside from the way that I have commanded you. And in the days to come, evil will befall you, because you will do what is evil on the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger through the work of your hands. Then Moses spoke the words of the song until they were finished in the ears of all the assembly of Israel. God and Moses weren't done with the people of Israel. He just told them he's about to go and die. But he still has some last bits of wisdom to give them, to deliver to them as their teacher, as someone who loves them. And Joshua, I'm going to get into more detail when we cover 32 next week. But here and now, it's all set up. God knows exactly what's going to happen. They're not going to listen. And yet, because he loves them, even though he sees the future, even though he sees them going into sin, he puts it down on stone. Write these things so that their children may know, oh, that's why this is all happening. This is all going to be a witness against our forefathers, our parents, because they didn't listen. Because we need these things written down. Thank God we have this book. I'm not just talking about Deuteronomy. I'm talking about the entire book, 66 books within the one book. And we get to have that and learn from it. And it is life-giving. There are Christians out there in the world who don't have an entire Bible to their name, who maybe have been forced to memorize certain segments of it, because if they wrote it down and someone found it, they would be murdered for it. That's happened multiple times throughout the centuries. It took a while for this all to be compiled together. The Israelites of old, at this time in history, don't benefit from the examples that are given in 1 and 2 Samuel or the prophet Jeremiah, just as much as people in Malachi's day, the last book of the Bible written, don't benefit from the Gospels. And the people who were alive for the Gospels weren't able to, maybe they died before Revelation was given. But we have the totality of it. We get to see these because men like Moses wrote these down for our sake, knowing that future generations would need this and benefit from it. So praise God for that, because God knows that we, like Israel, will stray. We will turn away from him and do evil in his sight. But we who are his will also return to him, because we remember these things, because they're brought up again. And we go, wait, I was wrong. I need to turn back. And just like Israel would turn back to God, we too are to do the same. So as I leave you this time through this message, just be thinking about all of this, about how seriously we take the idea of reading through his scriptures, of learning from them, and then go out and read on your own time. Ask questions if you do have questions. I'm about to give the email in a bit. I'm more than happy to answer them as best of my ability as possible. And if I can't, I will do my best to send you someone who can. But read them on your own time. Benefit from the labor of those who came before us, who did not have what we have, so we can remember the laws of God and love him and his creation well. Thank you all for hanging out with me today. Please get a chance to leave a 5-star review in your podcasting flap of a horse of choice. Cannot speak today. Because it'll help us with the ratings there and help us find more people. Please feel free to share the show with your friends and family members. If you're interested in my own fiction writing, you can find my works at starvingwritersguild.com or on Amazon by searching for the name MC Ashley. If you're interested in some further solid studies into the Bible and its teachings, then check out the other members of the Anazon Ministry Podcasting Network. You can find me specifically in Systematic Ecology, Why I Don't Like, Friday Night Frights, and Some Joyful Noises. You can contact me at letnothingmoviepodcast@gmail.com. I'd like to extend a special thank you to Joshua Noel for the editing that he does and for the music he has to the podcast. And with all that in mind, God bless you in accordance to his will, not mine. Allow me one more time to remind you, let nothing move you.